Negro. Really? Amanda had never heard of such a thing. Did he test the skin yet? Because I think... At first she thought Dina was crying. Then Amanda realized the woman was laughing so hard that she had started gulping for air. Oh, very funny, Amanda said. I'm hanging up now. No, wait, Dina was still laughing, though she was obviously trying to get it under control. Wait, don't hang up, she kept laughing. Amanda looked down at Keller's desk. Cigarette butts spilled out of the ashtray. His coffee cup was rimmed in an orange nicotine stain. Okay, Dina said, all right. And then she started laughing again. I'm really hanging up now. No, wait, she coughed a few times. I'm good now. I'm good. I was asking a sincere question. I know you were, honey. I know. She coughed again. Listen, you know that Pure and Simple lotion ad shows the different layers of skin? Amanda couldn't tell whether or not she was setting up another joke. I'm serious, girl. Listen to me. Okay, I know the ad. The skin basically has three layers, all right? All right. Usually, when you scratch someone, you get the upper dermis, which is white, no matter who you are. In order to get the pigmented layer of skin, the black part, you'd have to scratch to the subcutis, which means the fingernail would have to go deep enough to cause some serious bleeding. And it wouldn't be a sliver of skin you'd have to scrape out from under the fingernail. It'd be a chunk. Amanda detected Pete's patient teaching tone in the woman's words. So there's no way to tell if the girl from Friday scratched a black assailant or a white one? Dina was quiet again, though this time she wasn't laughing. You're talking about that pimp they arrested for killing that white girl, aren't you? Amanda saw a guard standing by Holly's desk. He was gangly, with an untrimmed mustache and dark hair. Holly waved Amanda over. Juice was ready. Amanda? Dina asked. I'm not playing now. You best think about what you're doing. I assumed you'd be eager to help one of your own kind. That murdering bastard ain't got nothing to do with me. She lowered her voice. I'm eager to keep my head attached to my shoulders is what I am. Well, thank you for answering my question. Wait. Holly's waving took on an urgency. She was probably afraid Keller would return. Amanda held up her finger, indicating she needed a minute. What is it? Be careful. The same people protecting you right now are going to be the same ones coming after you when they find out what you're doing. There was a long silence after that. Both of them reflected on the words. Thank you. Amanda tried not to read anything into Dina's gruff goodbye. She hung up the phone. Her heart was thumping in her chest. The woman was right. Duke would be furious if he knew what Amanda was doing. So would Keller, so would Butch and Landry, and possibly Hodge. Add the whole department to that if they found out she was trying to help a black man get out of jail. A black man who'd already confessed to murder. Holly came to the doorway. Hurry up, Mandy. Philip's going to take you down and stay with you. She lowered her voice. He's not so bad. Amanda felt the urge to flee. Her bravado was going up and down like a piston engine. I'm ready. She stood from the desk. She forced a smile onto her face as Philip came into the office. He was wearing the dark blue uniform of the prison guards, a set of keys hanging from one side of his belt, and a nightstick dangling from the other. He was younger than Amanda, but he talked to her as if she was a child. You sure you want to be doing this, gal? Amanda swallowed past the lump in her throat. She wished that Evelyn were there to give her strength. Then she felt guilty, because Evelyn had been taking the brunt of the anger lately. Not just from Rick Landry, but from Butch and whoever had transferred her into Model City. Maybe Evelyn was right. Maybe people were careful with Amanda because they were afraid of Duke. Instead of being afraid of him herself, Amanda should be taking advantage of it. At least, for as long as she could. "I'm not sure we've met." Amanda walked toward the man, hand extended. "I'm Amanda Wagner, Duke's daughter." His eyes shifted to Holly, then to Amanda as he shook her hand.
"Yeah, I know Duke.
He's friends with Bubba." Amanda never called Keller by his first name, but the guard needn't know that. She took her purse out of the chair and dug around for the new pen and spiral-bound notebook she'd brought from home. She handed her bag to Holly. "Mind holding on to this for me?" Holly stared wide-eyed as Amanda walked out of the office. She forced herself to keep a steady pace as she passed through the typing pool. The constant spinning and pecking of the electric balls seemed to match the erratic beats of her heart. But Amanda forced herself to keep walking. Going into the men's jail was likely the same as going into a swimming pool. You either jumped in and experienced that quick shock of cold, or you dragged it out, walking in slowly, your skin prickling with goosebumps, your teeth chattering. Amanda jumped right in. She held onto the railing as she walked down the stairs. She didn't wait for Philip to open the door. She pushed it with the palm of her hand. The cells. Holly was right. The men's side was far worse than the women's. Large cracks split the walls. Pigeons cooed from the rafters. Their droppings littered the concrete floor. She stepped over a passed-out wino, leaning against the wall. She ignored the catcalls and the stares. She kept her posture straight, her eyes ahead, until Philip spoke.
"It's on the left."
Amanda stopped in front of a door. Someone had used a knife to carve "interrogation" into the thick lead paint. There was a square window at eye level, though the glass was nearly opaque with grime. Philip took out a set of keys and searched for the right one. He swayed slightly, obviously from drink. Finally, he found the correct key. He slid it into the lock and pushed open the door. Amanda turned around, preventing him from going in. She said, "I've got it from here." He laughed, then saw she was serious.
"Are you nuts?"
"I'll call you if I need you."
"That ain't gonna be enough time."
He indicated the door.
"This thing locks when you close it. I can leave it cracked, so..."
"Thank you." She pulled one of Rick Landry's moves, closing the space between them, forcing him back without having to touch him. The last thing she saw of Philip was the shocked expression on his face when she closed the door. The clicking of the latch echoed in the room. She caught a glimpse of the guard's blue hat, just the rim, in the window, but nothing else. And then she turned around. Dwayne Matheson was sitting at the table. A bloody white bandage was wrapped around his head. One of his eyes was swollen shut. His nose was broken. He had pulled back his chair several feet so it was almost touching the wall. Amanda recognized his clothes as the same he'd had on last week, though they were stained with blood and dirt now. His legs were wide apart. His arm hung over the back of the chair, fingers nearly touching the floor. She could see the Jesus tattoo on his chest, the mole on his cheek, the hate in his eyes.
"What you doing here, bitch?"
It was a good question. Amanda had never before interviewed a suspect in a proper interrogation room. She was usually in the suspect's home. His parents were in the room, sometimes a lawyer. The boys were always contrite, terrified to be talking to a police officer, though relieved it was just a woman. Their fathers assured Amanda that it would never happen again. Their mothers revealed salacious details about the girl who'd made the allegations. Generally, it was over in less than an hour, and the boy was left to get on with his life. So what was she doing here? Amanda hugged her notebook to her chest, then regretted the move. Juice would think she was covering her breasts. He would think she was scared.
both of which were true, but she couldn't let him know that. She dropped her arms as she walked to the table. The room was small. It was just a few steps. She dragged back the empty chair and sat down. Juice was watching her the way an animal studies prey. Amanda pulled the chair closer to the table, though every muscle in her body was tingling with the desire to flee. In seconds, he could lurch across the table and snap her neck. He could punch her, beat her, try to rape her again. Amanda had always worried that if something bad happened, a man broke into her apartment in the middle of the night, an attacker cornered her in an alley, she would not be able to scream. She hadn't screamed before when Juice had threatened her. Could she scream now if he lunged for her? Would Philip even hear her? If he did, would he be able to find his keys in time to stop the worst of it? Amanda couldn't generate enough saliva in her mouth to swallow. She opened her notebook.
"Mr. Matheson, I understand that you've confessed to the murder of Lucy Bennett."
He didn't answer. Water dripped from a hole in the ceiling. The drops had puddled on the floor. There was a dead rat in the corner, its neck broken by a trap. Cobwebs filled the corners. The air stank of sweat mixed with the distinctive ammonia smell of dried urine. She said, "Mr. Math." Juice slowly licked his tongue along his top lip.
"You still a fine-looking woman."
He made a tisking noise.
"Should have took you when I had the chance."
Incongruously, Amanda felt a smile wanting to come to her lips. She could hear Evelyn's voice, the way she'd mimicked Juice when they were at the varsity. Her tone was surprisingly strong when she said,
"Well, you lost your chance."
Amanda clicked her pen so she could take notes.
"What happened to Jane Delray?"
He made a noise somewhere between a grunt and a groan.
"Why are you asking after that bitch?"
"I want to know where she is." He held his hand up above his head and whistled like a dive-bombing airplane as he dropped it to the table. Amanda looked at his hand. Two of his fingers were taped together with surgical tape. There were no scratches on his hands, his bare arms.
"You confessed to killing Lucy Bennett." "I confess to keeping my black ass out of the electric chair."
"The death penalty is no longer legal."
"They say they gon' bring it back for me."
Given the circumstances, Amanda didn't doubt that the state would try. Everyone knew it was only a matter of time before old Sparky was powered back up again. She said,
"We both know you didn't kill that woman." "Wished I woulda."
"Why didn't you?"
"Why you here, bitch? Why you care what happened to a nigger?"
"I don't, actually." Amanda was startled by the truth of her own words.
"I care about the girls." "'Cause they what?"
"No." Again, she told him the truth.
"Because they're girls. Because no one else cares about them."
He looked at her. Amanda hadn't realized until that moment that Juice had been avoiding her eyes. She stared back at him, wondering if she was the first woman who'd had the courage to do so. He must have a mother somewhere. A sister. He couldn't rape and whore out every woman he met. Juice tapped his hand on the table. Amanda didn't look away, but Juice did.
"You're like her."
"Like who?"
"Lucy."
He kept tapping his fingers on the tabletop.
"She's strong. Too strong. I break her down, but she always get back up."
"Was Kitty like that too?"
"Kitty,"
he snorted.
"That bitch near about broke me, you hear what I'm saying? Had to beat her down and keep her down."
He pointed at Amanda.
"You run them gals long enough, you see the strongest ones, the one what's gonna be most loyal. All you gotta do is find your way in."
"I'll keep that in mind if I ever decide to trick out women." He put his palms flat on the table and leaned toward her.
I trick you out, bitch. Gimme 5 minutes with that fine white ass.
He started thrusting his hips, banging against the table.
Dig my hands in that juicy white meat. Stick it in you till you're crying.
He banged harder against the table, punctuating each thrust with a deep moan. It was a guttural sound that made her note the dark bruises on his throat. She asked, "Would you choke me?"
"I choke you, bitch."
He pushed one last time against the table.
"I choke you till you come so hard you pass out."
"Do you like being choked?"
"Shit."
He crossed his arms over his chest. His biceps were huge.
"Ain't nobody choking this brother."
Amanda remembered something Pete had said in the morgue.
"Did you urinate on yourself?" "I ain't piss myself."
He tilted up his chin defensively.
"Who told you that?"
Amanda felt a smug smile on her lips.
"You just did."
He stared at the wall. "The apartment at Techwood. That's Kitty's, isn't it?" He didn't answer.
"I can stay here all day," she told him.
And in that moment, Amanda could see herself doing just that. Bubba Keller would have to drag her from this room. She would sit here, staring down this disgusting pimp for as long as it took.
"The apartment at Techwood belonged to Kitty, did it not?"
Juice seemed to understand her resolve.
"That's all of them girls. She charged out, trying to pimp 'em space. I put a stop to that."
Amanda couldn't imagine another woman charging rent to whores. But in the last few days, her worldview had expanded considerably.
"Tell me about Hank Bennett." "What'd he tell you?"
"You tell me about him."
"Fool came onto my corner trying to order me around."
His fist was clenched when he banged it on the table.
"Man need to step back."
"When was this?"
"I don't know, bitch. I ain't keep a calendar."
Amanda made a slash mark on the paper. If she had a dollar for every time a man had called her a bitch lately, she could retire.
"Did Hank Bennett see you before or after Lucy disappeared?"
His tongue darted out as he thought it over.
"Before, yeah, before. Bitch up and gone a week, 2 weeks later. I figure he took her. Lucy talk about him all the time."
Amanda's dictation was rusty, but it came back to her as she scribbled notes across the page.
"So Hank Bennett approached you before Lucy disappeared."
Another lie they'd caught the lawyer in.
"What did he want?" "Wanted to tell me my business. Brother better be glad I didn't beat down his skinny white ass."
"What business?"
"Told me cut Kitty loose. Said he'd pass me some bills if I stopped giving her the boy."
Amanda was sure she'd heard wrong.
"Kitty? You mean Lucy?" "No, bitch. It was Kitty he wanted to talk about. Dude had a hard-on for her."
"Why would Hank Bennett care about Kitty?" He shrugged his shoulders, but still answered.
"Her daddy's some big-time lawyer. Disowned the bitch when he found out she was sipping some juice."
He gave her a lurid grin, making sure she got his meaning.
"She got another sister somewhere. She the good one. Kitty always been bad."
"Kitty's father is Andrew Treadwell." He nodded.
"You finally getting it, bitch. Ain't the mayor tell you this already?"
Amanda flipped back through her notes.
"Hank Bennett offered you money to stop giving Kitty heroin." "Why you keep repeating everything I say?"
"Because it doesn't make sense," Amanda admitted.
"Hank Bennett comes to you about Kitty. He doesn't ask about his sister? Ask to see her?"
Juice shook his head.
"He's not worried about Lucy?"
Again, Juice shook his head.
"And a week later, Lucy disappeared?" "Yeah, and about a week after."
He snapped his fingers.
"Kitty gone."
Amanda remembered Jane's words.
"Just disappeared." "That's right."
"What about Mary?" He snorted.
"Bitch gone too, about 2-3 months later. Ain't been a while since I lose that many girls at a go. Usually some other pimp trying to poach me off."
"You had 3 girls disappear in as many months," Amanda wasn't asking him a question. She was trying to get her head around what had happened.
"Did you ever see Lucy with a letter from her brother?"
He gave a curt nod.
"Had it in her purse. Can you read?"
"Bitch, I ain't ignorant."
Amanda waited.
"Some bullshit about how he missed her when I knowed that ain't the truth. Said he wanted to meet with her."
Juice thumped the table with his fingers.
"Shit. Brother wanna see her, he could have spent 5 more minutes on my corner. I told him she'd be right there."
Amanda scribbled down his words as she tried to think through her next question.
"Was there anyone hanging around who was..." Scary wasn't the right word for a man like Juice. "Who wasn't right? Someone who was dangerous or violent? Someone you wouldn't trust with your girls?"
"Bitch, I charge extra for that."
He smiled. One of his front teeth was missing. The gum was raw.
"They some weird motherfuckers out there."
He cleared his throat.
"Excuse me."
Amanda nodded at the apology.
"What weird people?" "They's a dude likes to fist 'em."
He pumped his fist in the air. Amanda guessed he meant punching the girls.
"They's one use a knife, but he all right. He never stick nobody. Least not with the blade."
"Anyone else?"
"They's that tall dude runs the soup kitchen."
"I've heard about him.
He real tight with the dude at the mission."
So, Trey Callahan had lied to them too.
"Dude always coming around at night trying to preach to my gals."
"The man from the soup kitchen." Juice nodded.
"Were the girls ever afraid of him?"
"Shit, they ain't afraid of nothing when I'm around. That's my job, bitch."
She made yet another slash on the paper. "This man from the church came at night to your street corner and tried to preach to Lucy and Kitty and..."
"No, they gone by then. Mary, too."
He sat up in his chair.
"Look it, that salvation shit okay during the day. But don't come shooting off about Jesus while I'm trying to do my business. You feel me?"
"I do."
Amanda leaned forward.
"Tell me who killed Jane Delray." "You get me out of here?"
Amanda was getting good at this game, but she wasn't quite there yet. Juice obviously read her expression.
"Shit."
He slumped back in his chair.
"You can't do nothing, bitch."
"If I could find someone from City Hall to talk to you, could you tell him who killed Jane?"
"Another slit?"
"No, a man. Someone in charge."
Amanda didn't know anyone downtown except for a bunch of secretaries. Still, she kept her shoulders straight, put some threat into her tone.
"But you have to tell him something meaningful. You have to give him a name that can be followed up on. Otherwise, that deal you made with Butch and Landry goes out the window. I promise you, the state will bring back the death penalty. By the time it goes to the Supreme Court, you'll be dead."
There was a tapping sound. His leg had started moving up and down. The heel of his patent leather shoe clicked against the concrete.
"I got a deal. Done made my confession."
"That doesn't matter anymore."
"What you mean?"
"I mean, you confessed to killing Lucy Bennett, not Jane Delray. Once I tell them about the mistake..."
She shrugged.
"I hope they remember to shave your head before they strap that metal cap on."
He was nervous. His breath whistled through his broken nose.
"What you mean, bitch?"
"You hear about the last guy they executed?
His hair caught on fire. The switch was too hot.
They couldn't turn it off.
He burned alive.
Flames went as high as the ceiling.
He screamed for 2 whole minutes before they found the junction box and shut it down."
Juice's throat worked. His leg was shaking so hard that his knee bumped the table.
"Give me a name, Juice. Tell me who killed Jane."
His fist clenched and unclenched. The table trembled.
"Give me a name."
He pounded his fist against the table.
"I ain't got a name."
Amanda clicked her pen. She closed her notebook. She hadn't flinched. She kept perfectly calm, waiting.
"God damn."
He spoke through clenched teeth.
"God Damn them bitches. Get me on the hook for this shit.
Who would want to kill Jane?
Everybody, he said. She mouth off all the time, make enemies on the street.
Anyone who would murder her?
Not without getting their throat slit. Bitch kept a knife in her purse, all them do. Girl knew how to use it. Can't turn your back on her for a minute, bitch mean as a snake.
That's pretty rich coming from her pimp. He didn't respond. His shoulders rounded, he gripped his hands in his lap.
What'd that other bitch say? About Kitty knowing the mayor, you think he can give a brother a hand, get me out of this mess?
I told you, if you tell me the truth, maybe I can help you. He stared at her, eyes going back and forth as if he was reading a book.
Shit, he mumbled. You think they gon' listen to you?
He pushed himself up from the table. Amanda's body tensed, but she stayed seated as he loomed over her.
Look round, you bitch.
He held out his hands.
They let a black man run this world before they let a slit do.
Amanda stood at Evelyn's front door with a bottle of wine in her hand. It wasn't the cheap stuff, but she was uncertain whether or not price had anything to do with taste. As with many things, she was out of her element, especially when Kenny Mitchell opened the door. A smile spread across his mouth. His teeth were perfect. His face was perfect. There wasn't anything about him she would change. Not that Amanda would be given the chance. He said,
"Amanda, great to see you again."
He leaned toward her, and without thinking, Amanda pulled back.
"Oh," she said, then leaned back in, looking more like a pecking duck than a grown woman.
The moment could have been made more awkward, but Kenny laughed as he put his hand to her face and kissed her cheek. She could feel the rough texture of his skin, the prickly hairs of his mustache. His other hand rested lightly on her arm. A rush of heat went straight through her.
Come in.
He held open the door. Amanda walked into the house, feeling instantly enveloped by the cool air.
It's nice, right?
Kenny took the bottle of wine from her. Every move he made had a certain kind of grace, like an athlete on the field.
Ev's in back putting down the kid. I'm afraid that odor you smell is from me and Bill trying to cook supper. May I bring you a glass of wine?
He looked at the bottle and gave a low whistle.
Classy stuff. Maybe I'll keep it for myself.
That's fine, Amanda said, not sure which question she was answering. She looked down at the floor, surprised to see that her feet were still there, that she wasn't melting into a bubbling pool of adolescent giddiness.
Whatever you like.
Kenny seemed not to notice, or maybe he was used to women acting so foolishly around him. He pointed down the hallway.
First door on the right.
Amanda felt his eyes on her as she walked down the hallway. Oddly, she thought about juice, the things he'd said about her bottom. Amanda bit her lip. Why, of all the things the pimp had said, had that particular one stuck in her head? Surely Kenny wasn't like that. He wasn't craven or crude. Neither was Amanda, which didn't explain the obscene images that were flashing in her mind as she gently knocked on the bedroom door. Evelyn whispered,
"Come in."
Amanda pushed open the door. Evelyn was sitting in a rocking chair. Zeke was in her arms. His head was flopped back. His arm hung down to the side. He was tow-headed with pink cheeks and a button nose. It wasn't surprising that Evelyn had such a beautiful baby, or that his nursery was so playfully decorated. Fluffy white sheep were painted on the light blue walls. His crib was a glossy white. The yellow in the sheets matched the carpet, which in turn matched the glowing nightlight that provided the only illumination in the room.
"You look nice,"
Evelyn whispered.
"Thank you."
Amanda self-consciously patted her hair. She'd washed it 4 times in an attempt to remove the odors from the jail, then dabbed some Charlie on her wrists and neck for other reasons.
"Do you want me to help in the kitchen?"
"No, it's Bill's night."
Evelyn groaned as she leveraged herself out of the chair. She cradled Zeke as she carried him to the crib. He flopped onto the mattress like a rag doll. Evelyn pulled up the sheet and tucked it around his narrow shoulders. Her fingers brushed back his hair. She leaned down and kissed his cheek before indicating they should leave. Instead of heading toward the kitchen, Evelyn took Amanda into the next room. Her dress was a short blue crinoline that rustled as she walked. She turned on the overhead light, revealing an office. Two desks were on opposite walls. Both were very tidy. Amanda guessed the black metal desk belonged to Bill Mitchell. She doubted he was using the elegantly curved white Rococo desk with pink glass knobs. Evelyn's spiral notebook was neatly lined up to the edge. A grocery list was beside it. Most remarkably, their earlier project was displayed on the wall. Evelyn had used thumbtacks to pin up the various pieces of construction paper. "I thought it would be easier this way." Evelyn rolled Bill's chair over for Amanda. She sat down at her desk and opened the top drawer. "I found these at the 5. Amanda took the licenses. Lucy Ann Bennett, Catherine Elizabeth Treadwell, Mary Louise Idle, Donna Mary Halston, Mary Abigail Ellis. She studied the photos carefully and set aside two of the Marys, leaving Donna Marie Halston. "This one looks like Kitty and Lucy." "That's what I thought." "He has a type." Amanda had never considered such a thing, but of course it made sense. Men always had certain types they were attracted to. Why would murder be any different? Evelyn said, "They all look so normal. You'd never guess what they were doing." Amanda stared at the girls' photographs. They did look normal. There was nothing to suggest that they were prostitutes. Nothing to indicate they had sunk to the lowest levels of depravity in order to feed an addiction. Most striking was their similarity. Long blonde hair, blue eyes, tall and slim, lush lips, expressive eyes. They were not just pretty, but beautiful. "They all list the same address," Amanda noted. "Techwood Homes. I can call back Pam Canali and see if she can trace the apartment to a roll number. I have a feeling it belongs to Kitty, but it wouldn't kill us to be certain." An idea occurred to her. "We could take these license photos to Techwood tomorrow. Like you said, it's 90% black there. Three white girls would stick out." "That's good. You hold on to them." Evelyn grabbed her notebook off the desk, but didn't open it. "I checked all the missing persons files at the rest of the precinct. There was nothing for Lucy or Jane, but I found one for Mary Halston. She has a sister who lives in Virginia who's been looking for her for almost a year." "We could call her." Amanda tucked the licenses into her purse. "I'm sure she'd talk to us." "We'll have to do it from here. If we call long distance from the station, they'll have our hides." Their hides were already in enough jeopardy. "Did anything else stick out?" "I checked the DNF." She looked down at the notebook. "None of them seemed to match our case." "But all those missing girls, Amanda. At least 20 of them. And no one thought to do anything but shove them in a file at the back of the cabinet." She slowly shook her head. Amanda felt ashamed for having told her about it in the first place. Evelyn continued, "They're dead. Or they've been abducted or hurt and no one cares. Or at least, no one knows to care. They must have families who are looking for them. But there are hardly any missing persons reports on black women. I guess their families know it doesn't matter. At least not." Her voice trailed off as she opened her notebook. "I wrote down their names. I don't know why. I just thought that somebody should. Somebody has to acknowledge that they're gone." Amanda looked at the long list of women's names. All dead. All tossed into files that no one ever looked at. Evelyn let out a long sigh. She put the notebook back on her desk. "How was the jail?"
"Disgusting."
Amanda dug around in her purse, though she hardly needed to refer to her notes. "Juice confessed to killing Lucy Bennett, but only to avoid the death penalty." "Did no one explain to him that we're no longer allowed to execute people?"
"They said they'd bring it back for him."
Evelyn nodded. "I suppose that's a smart move on Juice's part, then."
"If you want to spend the rest of your life in prison."
Amanda opened her notebook. He confirmed Kitty is Andrew Treadwell's daughter.
Well, she smiled smugly, our black sheep theory was correct.
I wouldn't hold my breath for a commendation, Amanda advised. Here's the best part. Juice said that Hank Bennett came to see him a week or so before Lucy disappeared.
Evelyn grunted. God, that man would rather climb a tree and lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth.
She took the pen off her desk and stood up to write on the puzzle wall.
Saw sister 1 week prior to disappearance, she called out, writing down the words under Hank Bennett's name.
What else did you say?
Hank Bennett told him to cut Kitty off heroin.
You mean Lucy?
No, I mean Kitty.
Evelyn turned around.
Why would Hank Bennett want Juice to cut Kitty off heroin?
Amanda pulled a Sergeant Hodge.
That's an interesting question.
Evelyn groaned as she looked back at the puzzle.
Maybe Andrew Treadwell sent Hank Bennett to get Kitty cleaned up.
Maybe.
Amanda could tell she wasn't convinced.
Okay, try this. Trey Callahan at the Union Mission said that Kitty stuck out from the other girls. She was obviously from an upper class. It wouldn't take much poking around to find out who her people were. Maybe Juice tried to blackmail Treadwell, and Treadwell sent Hank Bennett to do his dirty work. She scanned her notes. Juice said it himself, that Bennett offered him money to get Kitty off the boy.
Evelyn breathed a heavy sigh. Bennett went to bribe Juice about Kitty, but then he saw that his sister was there?
Juice said that Bennett didn't see Lucy at the time, but who knows? They all lie.
Yes, they do. Evelyn bent down and studied the yellow page with the timeline drawn out. We need to update this. Call it out to me.
Thanks for taking the hard part.
Amanda flipped through her notes as Evelyn waited.
Okay, the letter for Lucy Bennett comes to the Union Mission. We have both Trey Callahan and Juice confirming that.
Evelyn took out a new piece of blue construction paper, stuck it on the wall, and wrote the letter across the center.
Did Juice know what it said?
That he wanted to see his sister, that he missed her. Juice took it for a load of bull.
Look at me agreeing with a pimp.
Amanda continued.
Hank Bennett shows up at the mission a few days later and talks to Trey Callahan. Then, presumably soon after, he goes to Juice on his street corner. He sees Kitty instead. He tells Juice to cut Kitty loose. He doesn't ask about his sister.
She squinted at her scribbles.
Juice made a point of telling me that he told Bennett to wait around for a few minutes, that Lucy would be right along, but Bennett didn't wait.
Evelyn guessed. So seeing Kitty put finding Lucy on the back burner for our boy lawyer.
Evidently.
Amanda concurred.
Then 2 weeks later, Lucy is gone. A week or so after that, Kitty is gone. And then Mary disappeared after that.
Amanda looked up from the notebook.
Three girls gone. But why?
Tell me so I can stop writing. Evelyn shook a cramp out of her hand before she finished the updating. Finally, she stood back and stared at the timeline. They both did. The puzzle was sprawling now, different bits of information floating around without a seeming connection.
I feel like we're missing something.
Okay. Amanda stood up. Pacing sometimes helped her think. Let's think about it this way. Bennett was trying to get in touch with his sister. His father was dead. His mother wanted to see her daughter to let her know what had happened. So Hank goes to the streets looking for Lucy. Only he finds Kitty Treadwell.
All right.
Bennett said that he sent Lucy the letter in August. He remembered it because he'd just graduated law school and his father was recently deceased. Later he told us that he was a first-year associate at Treadwell Price.
Oh,
Evelyn drew out the word. She picked up her pen and wrote down the approximate dates. Bennett sees Kitty hoard out on the streets and parlays that into a job with Treadwell Price? She smiled. That's a top firm. A job there sets you up for life. I can totally see that weasel trying to work his sister's tragedy to his own benefit.
Right.
Evelyn sat back down in the chair.
But what does this have to do with Jane Delray? And why would Bennett lie about the ID? What does he gain from Lucy being dead? Oh! She excitedly jabbed the pen in the air. Insurance! I was looking at it from the wrong angle. Of course there's no policy on Lucy. Bennett told us himself his father's dead, the mother's just as good as, which leaves the estate and whatever policies the parents have to the children. She sat up in the chair. Maybe Bennett wanted to see Lucy in order to get her to sign away her claim to the estate. That happened with one of Bill's clients last year. The old man was batty as a fruitcake. His children got him to sign away every last dime.
Hank Bennett certainly strikes me as an opportunist.
And besides, what would be the alternative? Evelyn asked. That Bennett killed Jane Delray? We saw him 2 days ago. His hands were perfectly clean. No cuts or bruises, which is exactly what you'd get if you attacked somebody. Amanda remembered the skin under Jane Delray's fingernails.
She scratched her assailant. You would think he'd have a mark on the back of his hands or his neck or face.
Unless she scratched his arm, his chest, he was wearing a 3-piece suit. Who knows what was under there? Evelyn blew out a puff of air.
I don't see Hank Bennett strangling a prostitute to death, then throwing her off the roof of Teckwood Homes, do you?
Amanda didn't know what the man was capable of.
I just get a bad feeling about him.
Me too. They both stared at the wall. Amanda let her gaze wander, picking up different names out of order. She said, Juice told me that Kitty was renting out her apartment to the other girls. I guess she gets that entrepreneurial spirit from her father.
The next logical step would be to interrogate Andrew Treadwell and Hank Bennett.
Or we could flap our hands and fly to the moon.
We should go back to Trey Callahan at the Union Mission. Juice said that he's friends with the guy who runs the soup kitchen.
Evelyn's mouth dropped open in surprise. Is it just me, or does everyone lie to us?
They lie to the men, too. No one tells you the truth if you have a badge.
Well, I suppose we should tell Betty Friedan we've finally achieved some parity. Amanda smiled. We should talk to the soup kitchen guy, too.
We still don't know who Butch's CI is. Someone at Teckwood identified Jane Delray as Lucy Bennett.
Evelyn took a clean sheet of paper out of her desk drawer. Okay, first thing tomorrow, Union Mission, then the soup kitchen, then Teckwood to show around the photographs of the girls. Do you think we could sneak a picture of Hank Bennett? She tapped her pen on the desk. I know a gal over at the Driver's License Bureau. I bet we can get his photograph that way. Amanda looked at her friend. She was showing the same mixture of excitement and purpose that Amanda had felt all week. Something about working this case made them forget the danger involved.
She said, Two people warned me off this today.
Landry?
Bree, then. Holly Scott and Dina Coolidge. They both told me that I was crazy to be doing this.
Evelyn chewed her lip. She didn't have to say that the women were right. Amanda asked, Are we really going to keep doing this? Evelyn stared back at her rather than respond. They both knew that they should stop. They both knew what was on the line. Not just their jobs. Their lives. Their futures. If they were fired from the police force, no one else would hire them. They would be pariahs.
Girls! Bill Mitchell called. Supper's on!
Evelyn stood up. She squeezed Amanda's hand. Pretend it's wonderful, whatever it is. Amanda didn't know whether Evelyn was referring to Bill's supper or the mess they were getting themselves into. Either way, she couldn't help but feel admiration as she followed the other woman into the hallway. Evelyn was either the most upbeat person the world had ever offered, or the most delusional.
Ladies, Kenny was standing beside the hi-fi with a record in his hands. What's your pleasure?
Evelyn smiled back at Amanda as she headed toward the kitchen, leaving her to answer the question.
Kenny suggested, Skinnerd, Allman Brothers, Clapton.
Amanda figured she might as well get this out of the way.
I'm sorry to say I'm more Sinatra. Do you know that I saw him at Madison Square Garden last year?
Kenny smiled at her surprise.
I flew up to New York just to see the show. I was 3 rows back. He came into the ring like a champ and belted on for hours.
Kenny thumbed through the record collection.
Here you go. I let Bill borrow this 6 months ago. I doubt he's even looked at it. Kenny showed her the record sleeve. The main event, live. Bill called, "Dinner's getting cold." Amanda waited for Kenny to put on the record. The overture played softly through the speakers. Kenny held out his arm and escorted her to the dining room. Evelyn was sitting in her husband's lap. He patted her bottom. She kissed him before getting up. "Amanda, the wine is lovely." She took a hefty sip from her glass. "You shouldn't have." "I'm glad it's palatable. I had a feeling the man at the store was misleading me." "I'm sure you're an excellent sommelier." Kenny pulled out a chair. Amanda sat down, letting her purse slide to the floor. Kenny's hand brushed across her shoulders before he sat down opposite his brother. Amanda held her wine glass to her mouth as she exhaled a breath of air between her lips. Bill asked, "What were you two gals up to? Should I be worried you're going to wallpaper the house with construction paper?"
"Maybe." Evelyn raised an eyebrow as she took another sip of wine. "We've got this case that's probably going to get us both fired."
"More time with my gal," Bill exclaimed. He hardly seemed worried as he stabbed a dry-looking piece of roast and put it on her plate. "Have you been mouthing off or making trouble?" He forked another piece of roast for Amanda. "Or both?"
Evelyn said, "We're likely going to get a black man out of jail."
Kenny laughed. "Making friends wherever you go."
"No kidding." Evelyn finished her glass of wine. "This particular fella is called Juice."
"Like the football player."
Bill topped off Amanda's glass, then refilled Evelyn's.
"Rushed for 1,700 yards in 68.
1,709, Kenny corrected.
"Ran 171 against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl." "To football." Bill raised his glass. "Hear, hear."
Kenny followed suit. They clinked their glasses in a toast. Amanda felt a warmth spread through her body. She hadn't realized how tense she was until the wine made her relax. Evelyn said, "The non-football Jew seems to have a crush on Amanda." She winked across the table. "Says she's a fine-looking woman."
"A very astute man."
Kenny winked at Amanda, too. She took a large drink of wine to cover her embarrassment.
"He's a pimp," Evelyn said.
"We met him at Techwood Homes last week."
Amanda felt her heart lurch in her chest, but Evelyn kept talking.
"He runs white women."
"My favorite kind."
Bill refilled Amanda's glass. She hadn't realized she'd finished the first one already. Amanda looked down at the food on her plate. The vegetables had obviously been frozen. The meat was overcooked. Even the roll was burned around the edges.
"This prostitute, Jane?" Evelyn rolled her eyes. "Her apartment was not what you'd call tidy."
"What was it you said, Amanda? I'll look for back copies of Good Housekeeping."
The men laughed, and Evelyn continued the story.
"She was an absolute terror to deal with."
Amanda sipped from her wine glass, which she kept pressed to her chest as she listened to Evelyn talk about the Techwood apartment, the mouthy whore. They all laughed when she mimicked Jane Delray's trashy accent. There was something about the way Evelyn told the story that made it sound funny instead of frightening. She could be relaying the plot of a television sitcom where two plucky gals stick their noses where they don't belong and end up escaping through wit and humor.
"Exit stage left," Amanda said.
They all laughed, though Evelyn's smile wasn't quite as genuine. She tugged at the back of her hair. Bill reached out and affectionately slapped away her hand.
"You're going to snatch yourself bald."
Amanda asked,
"Was it hard getting your hair cut?"
Evelyn shrugged. Obviously it had been, but she said,
"After Zeke, I didn't have time for it."
The wine had made Amanda brazen. She asked Bill,
"Did you mind?"
He took Evelyn's hand.
"Anything that makes my girl happy."
"I cried for at least an hour."
Evelyn laughed, though her heart wasn't into it.
"I think it was closer to 6, Bill said, "but I like it."
"It's very stylish," Kenny offered.
"But long is nice, too."
Amanda patted the back of her hair. She was worse than Evelyn.
"Why don't you let it down?"
The request came from Kenny. Amanda was both surprised and deeply embarrassed.
She was also dangerously close to complete inebriation, which was probably why she complied with the request. Amanda silently counted out the bobby pins as she pulled them from her hair. 5, 6, 7. There were 8 total, plus the hairspray, which made her fingers sticky as she ran them through her hair. It draped to the middle of her back. Amanda cut the ends once a year. She only kept it down in the winter, and then only at night when she was alone. Evelyn sighed. "You're so pretty." Amanda finished her wine. She was already dizzy. She should at least eat a dinner roll to absorb some of the alcohol, but she didn't want to hear the sound of her own chewing. The room was quiet, except for the record playing. Sinatra singing "Autumn in New York." Bill picked up the bottle and topped them off again. Amanda thought to cover the glass with her hand, but she couldn't make herself move. The phone rang in the kitchen. Evelyn startled. Gosh, who could be calling this late? Amanda couldn't be alone in a room like this. She followed Evelyn into the kitchen. Mitchell residence. Amanda pulled back her hair, twisting it around the crown. She stuck the bobby pins back in. Her movements were clumsy. Too much wine. Too much attention. Where? Evelyn asked. She pulled the long telephone cord across the room and got a pen and paper out of the drawer. Say that again, she scribbled as she spoke. And when was this? She made some noises, encouraging the caller to continue. Finally, she said, "We'll be right there," and hung up.
Right where?
Amanda asked. She kept her hand on the kitchen counter. The wine had pickled her brain.
Who was that?
Dina Coolidge. Evelyn folded the piece of paper in half. They've just found another body. Amanda felt her focus snap back.
Who?
They don't know yet. Blonde, thin, pretty.
That sounds familiar.
They found her at Techwood Homes. Evelyn pushed open the door to the dining room. Sorry, boys. We need to step out. Bill smiled.
You're just trying to get out of doing dishes.
I'll do them in the morning. They exchanged a look. Amanda realized that Bill Mitchell wasn't as naive as she had first imagined. He saw through his wife's funny stories, the same as Amanda. He raised his glass in a toast.
I'll wait up for you, my love.
Evelyn grabbed Amanda's purse before letting the door swing closed.
I'm drunk as a lord, she muttered. I hope I don't end up driving us into the creek.
I'll drive. Amanda followed her out the kitchen door. Instead of heading to the car, Evelyn went to the shed. The men had finished the job except for the painting. Evelyn ran her hand along the top of the door trim and found the key. She tugged on the chain to turn on the light. There was a safe bolted to the floor. Evelyn had to try the combination 3 times before she finally got it open.
I think we drank that whole bottle between us. Why did Dina call you?
I asked her to let me know if anything else came up. Evelyn pulled out her revolver. She checked there was ammunition in the cylinder, then snapped it back into place. She took out the speed loader, then shut the safe door. Let's go.
Do you think you'll need that?
Evelyn tucked the revolver into her purse.
I'm never going anywhere without it again.
She grabbed the shelf as she stood up. Her eyes closed as she oriented herself.
They're probably going to give us both DUIs. That'll hardly make us stand out.
Evelyn pulled off the light and locked the door. Amanda took deep breaths of air as she walked to her car, trying to clear her head. Evelyn said, "You know this means Juice didn't do it."
Did we ever really think he did?
No, but now they'll know, too. Amanda climbed into the car. She threw her purse into the back seat as she waited for Evelyn to get in. The drive to Techwood wasn't a long one, especially at 8 o'clock in the evening. There was no traffic on the road. The only people who stayed in Atlanta after dark were the ones who had no business being there. Which was a good thing, considering Amanda's state of intoxication. If she accidentally hit a pedestrian, no one was likely to care. The traffic lights were flashing yellow as she traveled up Piedmont Road. Amanda took the steep curve that turned into 14th Street, then slowed for the blinking light before turning left on Peachtree. Another right on North, and she was following the same pattern they'd worn last week. past the varsity, over the interstate, left on Techwood Drive, and straight into the hell of the projects. Several police cruisers were blocking the path to their usual berm. Amanda parked behind a familiar Plymouth Fury. She glanced inside the car as she passed. Wadded up packs of cigarettes, a half-empty bottle of Johnny Walker, crushed cans of beer. She followed Evelyn toward the buildings. Again, Rick Landry was standing in the middle of the courtyard. His hands were on his hips, his face twisted with anger when he saw Amanda and Evelyn.
"What I gotta do? Beat it into you broads!"
He looked ready to do just that, but Dina Coolidge stopped him.
"Y'all ready?"
Landry glared at her.
"Ain't nobody called for a pickaninny, Sapphire."
She puffed out her chest.
"You need to get your cracker ass out of my face before I pimp you up to Reggie."
Landry tried to stare her down, but Dina, who was at least a foot shorter than him, stood her ground. Landry finally relented, but not without mumbling, "Cunts," as he stomped away. Dina asked,
"Y'all wondering what him and Butch are doing here when they're both on day shift? Because I sure am."
Amanda looked at Evelyn, who nodded. It did seem strange. Dina said,
"Pete's around back with the body, but I've got somebody for you to talk to first."
Neither of them spoke as they followed Dina into the building. The hall was packed with women and children dressed in housecoats and pajamas. Their faces were guarded and frightened. They had probably been settled down for the night when the police cars showed up. They'd all left their front doors open. The lights from the cruisers filled the apartments. Amanda was very conscious that hers and Evelyn's were the only white faces as Dina took them deeper into the building. Only one apartment door on the floor was closed. Dina knocked on it. They waited for a chain to slide back, deadbolts to turn. The old woman who opened the door was dressed in a black skirt and jacket. Her white blouse was crisply starched. She was wearing a fine black hat with a short veil that hung to the top of her eyebrows.
"What you doing dressed up for church, Miss Lula?" Dina asked. "I told you these gals just want to talk. They ain't gonna drag you down to the jail."
The old woman stared at the floor. She was cowed by their presence. That much was evident. Even when she stepped back so that they could enter, it was obvious that she was doing so under great duress. Amanda felt deeply ashamed as she walked into the apartment. Dina suggested,
"Why don't you get us some tea, dear?"
Miss Lula nodded as she headed into the other room. Dina indicated the couch, which was a pale yellow and absolutely spotless. In fact, the living room was remarkably tidy. The one chair that faced the small television had a ruffled skirt and a doily. Magazines were neatly stacked on the table. The rug on the floor was clean. Pictures of Martin Luther King Jr. and Jack Kennedy faced each other on the wall. There were no cobwebs in the corners. Even the stench of the building had not managed to permeate the space. Still, neither Evelyn nor Amanda sat down. They were too mindful of the setting. As spotless as this woman's apartment seemed, it was still surrounded by filth. You might as well drag a clean blanket through a mud puddle and expect it to remain unscathed. They heard a kettle start to boil in the kitchen. Dina's tone was firm.
"Y'all best both be sitting your white asses down by the time she comes back in here."
Dina took the chair by the television. Reluctantly, Evelyn sat on the couch. Amanda joined her, keeping her purse clutched in her lap. Both of them sat on the edge of the cushions. Not from fear of contamination, but because they were on duty. Years of wearing utility belts around their waists had made it impossible for them to sit back in their seats. Amanda asked,
"Who called in the body?"
Dina nodded toward the kitchen.
"Miss Lula did. She's been here since they integrated the place. They moved her over from Buttermilk."
"Why does she think we're going to arrest her?"
"Because you're white and you have a badge."
Evelyn mumbled, "That's never impressed anybody before." Miss Lula was back. She had taken off her hat, revealing a shock of white hair. The china cups and saucers on her silver tray rattled as she brought the set into the living room. Instinctively, Amanda stood to help. The tray was heavy. She lowered it to the coffee table. Dina relinquished her chair to the old woman. It was a neat trick. Dina carefully smoothed down the back of her pants, probably checking for insects. A roach traveled across the wall behind her. Dina shuddered.
"Would you ladies like some cookies?"
Miss Lula offered. Her voice was unexpectedly refined. There was almost the tinge of an English accent to it, like Lena Horne's. Evelyn answered, "Thank you, no, we've just had supper." She reached toward the teapot. "May I?" Miss Lula nodded. Amanda watched Evelyn pour four cups of tea. It was the strangest thing she'd ever been a part of. Amanda had never been a guest in a black person's home. Usually the point of her visit was to get in and get out as quickly as possible. She felt as if she was in one of those Carol Burnett sketches that was trying for social commentary rather than humor. Dina said, "Miss Lula used to be a teacher at the Negro school off Benson." Amanda offered, "My mother was a teacher, elementary school."
"That was my field as well,"
Miss Lula answered. She took the cup and saucer Evelyn offered. Her hands were old, the knuckles swollen. There was a slight ash tone. She pursed her lips and blew on the tea to cool it. Evelyn served Dina next, then Amanda. "Thank you." Amanda could feel the heat through the china, but she drank the scalding tea anyway, hoping the caffeine would help chase away the wine. She looked up at the photos of Kennedy facing King. Again, taking in the orderly apartment that Miss Lula called home. When Amanda had worked patrol, some of the men made a game of terrorizing these old people. They'd roll their cruisers up behind them in the street and purposefully backfire the car. Grocery bags were dropped, hands flew into the air. Most of them would fall to the ground. The backfire sounded like a gunshot. "Now," Dina had waited until they'd all had some tea. "Miss Lula, if you could tell these women what you told me." The old woman cast down her eyes again. She was obviously troubled.
"I heard a commotion in the back."
Amanda realized the woman's apartment faced the rear of the complex. It was the same area where Jane Delray had been found 3 days ago. Miss Lula continued,
"I peered out the window and saw the girl just lying there. She had obviously passed."
She shook her head.
"Terrible sight. No matter their sins, no one deserves that."
Evelyn asked, "Was there anyone else back there?"
"Not as far as I could tell."
"Do you know what the noise was? The one that made you look out the window?"
"Perhaps it was the rear door banging open."
She didn't seem sure, though she nodded as if that was the only explanation that made sense. Amanda asked, "Have you noticed anyone strange hanging around?"
"No more so than usual. Most of these girls had evening visitors. They generally came in through the back door."
That would make sense. None of the men probably wanted to be seen. Amanda asked, "Did you recognize the girl you saw out back?"
"She's from the top floor. I don't know her name, but I said from the beginning that they should not have been allowed to live here."
Dina supplied, "Because they're prostitutes, not because they're white." Miss Lula said,
"They were operating their business out of the apartment. That is contrary to the housing laws."
Evelyn put down her cup of tea.
"Did you see any of their customers?"
"Occasionally. As I said, they mostly used the back door, especially the white men."
"They saw both white and black men?"
"Frequently, one after the other."
They were all silent as they considered the statement. Evelyn asked, "How many women were living up there?"
"At first it was the young one. She said her name was Kitty. Seemed nice enough. She gave candy to some of the children, which was allowed until we realized what she was doing up there. And then,"
Amanda asked,
"and then another woman moved in. It was at least a year and a half ago, mind you. The second girl was white, too, looked very similar to Kitty. I never got her name. Her visitors were not as discreet."
"Is that the woman you saw through your window tonight, Kitty?"
"No, a third one. I've not seen Kitty in a while, nor have I seen the second one in some time. These girls are very transitory. She paused, then added, Lord help them. It's a difficult path they've chosen.
Amanda remembered the licenses she'd tucked into her purse. She unzipped her bag and pulled them out. Do you recognize any of these girls? The old woman took the licenses. Her reading glasses were neatly folded on the side table, resting atop a well-read Bible. They all watched as she